Welcome to our podcast on Board CEO Relations. I'm Rita Cepeda, and I will be your guide for this seminar. This podcast is one of several developed by the Community College League of California as part of their CEO Strategic Leadership Program. The program is grounded in the belief that CEO leadership development must be data-informed, relevant, pragmatic, and led by experienced and successful California Community College leaders. My history with California Community Colleges spans 35 years, the first 15 as a member of the State Chancellor's Office, and the last 20 as Interim President, President, and Chancellor in 5 Community College districts. And while academic preparation places each of us on the road to the presidency, I always said to myself, I wish there were a course or a book titled Lessons My Mother Never Taught Me About Being a Community College CEO. In fact, now that I'm retired, I'm determined to write such a book. So why pick this topic as the first one for the series of podcasts? The answer is simple. If the CEO-board relationship is solid, you will succeed in meeting the needs of students in your institution. If the CEO-board relationship is poor, no amount of goodwill, understanding of instructional policy, knowledge of budgets and facilities, or even your acumen with community relations will enable you to serve and meet the needs of the students in your community. This sounds like a radical make-or-break pronouncement, but please understand that it is a lesson best learned early in your journey. I certainly wish someone had taken me aside to make such an admonition. I started with wide-eyed anticipation, feeling solid academically and confident in my philosophy as an educator. I knew that community college students were my true north. So what could go wrong? As a woman, a mother, a Latina immigrant for whom English was a second language, I even felt I had an extra edge in understanding community college students. I certainly felt focused, full of passion, and prepared to meet our students' educational excellence and equity needs. After all, I was in the absolute best place, the People's College. Better yet, I was in the California Community College system, the largest public post-secondary education system anywhere in the country. I felt ready. And now, let us begin at the beginning. First, let me tell you that I will reference several lists and quote directly from several sources in the process of telling this story. Do not worry about writing these down. After we have finished our talk, you can go directly to the League's website under CEO Strategic Leadership Program at www.ccleague.org. There, you will find a copy of the transcripts for this script, accompanied by a PowerPoint that abstracts the significant points from this discussion. Now let us get started. Topic number one, roles and function. I'm not a sports enthusiast, but nearly everyone in my family is. And so it came to pass that I learned the term unforced error. I invite you to look up the definition in Merriam-Webster's.com. An unforced error is defined as, quote, a missed shot or lost point that is entirely a result of the player's own blunder and not because of the opponent's skill, end quote. Therefore, the best way to avoid these pointless mistakes is to be clear about board CEO roles and functions. Many publications focus on this topic. One of my favorites is the Carver Policy Governance Model. I use the principles established in this model for guidance at an exceedingly difficult time during my tenure as chancellor of the San Jose Evergreen Community College District. We have in fact presented a workshop regarding our process and findings at the League's conference in 2015, and we followed with progress reports 2 years later. We liked the Carver model because it provided us with actual how-to or working definition about board leadership in governance and the role of the CEO in the implementation of board policy. However, we found that while we could live with most of the principles of the Carver model, some facets could not be implemented within the participatory governance parameters of the California Community Colleges. Our answer was to adapt the model to our needs instead of adopting it wholesale. To do this, we use as guidelines the requirements of the Education Code, Title V of the Administrative Code, and just as important, the League's publication, Board and CEO Roles, Different Jobs, Different Tasks. Authority in law, the Education Code, and Title V of the Administration Code of Regulations. At this point, you may ask yourself if the only way to avoid unforced errors is to become fluent in Ed Code language and Title V regulations. The answer is yes and no. Yes, from the perspective that you should know about the broad scope of the law, its genesis, and enforcement requirements. No, if instead you focus on understanding when and how to search for pertinent information to guide the decisions you're about to make and when you need to seek legal counsel. Suffice it to say that there are laws, statutes, and administrative regulations that govern every part of the work of the CEO, whether it is educational programming, staffing, contracts, facilities, budgets, emergency preparedness, admissions, prohibitions of discrimination, intersegmental relations, and even the proper scheduling of meetings. It is all there, as they say, soup to nuts. In short, the Education Code has primacy in that it is a product of legislation, and only another piece of legislation can amend or change it. This was the case in 1988 when AB 1725 was adopted. In those days, I was a member of the State Chancellor's Office, and I remember the countless hours we spent across the street, our euphemistic term for the state capital. Today, most people seem to equate AB 1725 with the establishment of participatory governance for community colleges. While this is certainly a particularly important outcome, in my view, the most prominent aspect of the law is the fact that for the first time in our history, community colleges were established as a system and not a loose confederation of colleges. Now let's turn to Title V regulations. The most important thing to say here is that the Education Code supersedes Title V simply because the code is law and the regulations are derived from the law. At this time, you may be thinking that this soup is getting a little thick, and as one of the characters in the film Amadeus said to Mozart, there are simply too many notes. To assuage your concerns, let me say that this is where your hard-earned research skills come in handy. It is all available to you through the wonderful world of Google search. All you have to do is select the key search words, which will lead you to numerous websites with specific and detailed answers. In the case of the Education Code, the best place is leginfo.legislature.ca.gov. If your question has to do with Title V, here again, detailed help is available by logging into California Code of Regulations, westlaw.com. Finally, if you have further questions, there's always legal counsel. Let's go on to our next topic, which has to do with understanding the roles and functions of the board and CEO. Different jobs, different tasks. If we are to understand roles and functions, it is most important at this point to draw a critical distinction between the three types of CEOs in the California community colleges, namely, 1. The superintendent president of a single college district, 2. The chancellor of a multi-college district, and 3. The president of one of the colleges within a multi-college district. Simply stated, the role and responsibilities for each of these administrative classifications differ in critical ways. The superintendent president is the chief executive officer of the college in a single college district. He or she is the only direct hire of the board and their only direct report. The chancellor is the CEO of a multi-college district and is the only direct hire and direct report to the board of trustees. College presidents in a multi-college district are selected and hired by the chancellor, and their names are submitted to the trustees for approval. These presidents directly report to the chancellor. Two key insights related regarding CEO board role and function must be drawn from these statements. The Board of Trustees, regardless of district configuration, has only one hire and only one direct report. The superintendent president, in the case of a single college district, or the chancellor in a multi-college district. College presidents within a multi-college district are direct hires of the chancellor. These presidents do not report to the board. They report to the chancellor, and trustees may not request direct action from these college presidents. To restate, actions or policy directives by the board in a multi-college district can only be directed to the chancellor. It may seem that I'm being unduly repetitive about these distinctions, but having been there, done that, as they say, I can assure you that a certain and clear understanding of your role in the organizational chart of the institution is the best guide in helping you to determine appropriate behavior and actions in response to any given situation and to avoid those unforced errors we discussed earlier. So now let us return to the central issue of this podcast, board CEO relations. Earlier, I mentioned my experience as chancellor of the San Jose Evergreen Community College District. In a nutshell, at the crux of the matter was a lack of clarity about the role and responsibilities of the board and my role and responsibility as chancellor. In other words, who was charged with doing what and where? In fact, the Accrediting Commission for Community and Junior Colleges, ACCJC, to this day continues to list misunderstandings about this issue as one of the most consistent accreditation problems found in site visits. At one point in 2019, the commission listed this issue as the top adverse finding for all community colleges in our state. After much study and review, the matter in question can best be explained as follows. Local boards of trustees and chief executive officers play different roles and have different responsibilities in leading their districts. Boards of trustees exert leadership through governing the college as elected officials on behalf of the community. Chief executives are hired by the board and receive their delegated authority to administer and manage the institution in accordance with the board's governing policies. In particular, the Ed Code authorizes local boards of trustees and defines their powers. Education Code 70902 establishes board responsibilities in the following areas. College plans, program approval, academic standards and graduation requirements, personnel and employment practices, budgets, tax and bond elections, district property, local decision-making process, student conduct, fees, grants, gifts, and scholarships, auxiliary services, academic calendar, and Board of Governors consultation. In turn, the Board of Trustees delegates its authority to the CEO to implement, monitor, and be accountable for each of these program areas. I want to return to my personal experience in sorting roles, functions, and delegation of authority once again. In the case of the San Jose Evergreen Community College District, the Accreditation Commission had identified this governance issue as a critical accreditation finding in dire need of remedy. I had been recently hired as chancellor for the district and seen the writing on the wall, and determined not to endanger the accreditation standing of our colleges, the trustees and I worked extremely hard over several months to develop the San Jose Evergreen Community College District Board of Trustees and its policies and governance principles. This governance policy document was subsequently formally adopted by the full board. At this point, it is worth restating the policy preamble in its entirety because it reflects months of review and discussion that enabled us to understand the difference between the role and function of the Board of Trustees and those of the Chancellor, the clear benefit to each party, and most important of all, the benefits to students and their families stemming from the effective and efficient governance and administration of the college. The policy preamble begins as follows. Quote, In developing and adapting this document, the members of the Board of Trustees aspire to achieve excellence in fulfilling the Board's responsibilities for the governance of the district. The Board's ENDS policies and governance principle establish 1. How the Board will govern to achieve its visionary objectives, and 2. Management authority that the Board delegates to the Chancellor to run the affairs of the district, along with requirements for the Chancellor's exercise of that authority. The Board seeks to establish practices for individual trustees and for the Board as a whole that ensure effective and efficient participation for each trustee, a clear understanding of the roles and responsibilities of individual trustees, a clear understanding of roles and responsibilities of the Board as a whole, an understanding of the difference between the Board's governance role and Chancellor's responsibility to manage the affairs of the district. The Board establishes a clear vision, values, and strategic priorities for the district. The Board adopts ENDS policies that clearly establish the Board's expectations regarding the outcomes that the Chancellor is to achieve. The Board delegates that responsibility to the Chancellor to lead the district towards the achievement of the Board's ENDS policies. The Board fully approves the Chancellor to hold and exercise all executive authority necessary to lead the district towards the achievement of the Board's ENDS policies. The Board establishes requirements for the Chancellor's exercise of the management authority that the Board delegates to the Chancellor. Individual trustees and the Board as a whole exercise the self-discipline necessary to avoid any interference with the Chancellor's exercise of the management authority delegated to him or her by the Board. The Board evaluates its own governance performance on an ongoing basis. The Board holds the Chancellor responsible for making demonstrable progress towards achieving the Board's ENDS policies and compliance with the executive requirements specified by the Board. End quote. This Board policy statement served countless times to provide guidance and clarity for the Board in their effective and efficient governance functions, and for me as Chancellor, by providing clear expectations of my accountability to the Board and, shall we say, reassurances about the parameters of non-interference that the Board had set for itself. I hope this discussion has been helpful. The biggest takeaway from our short talk should be that no amount of preparation and dedication can take the place of knowing the rules of the game. And this game is prescribed by well-defined parameters in law and regulation that require compliance from both the Board of Trustees and the CEO. Failure to understand and to comply leads to 1. Dysfunctional board-CEO relations that result in loss of effective and efficient management of the college and the inevitable loss of respect and tolerance that accompanies conflict. Both parties suffer, but most important of all, the students and the community are the ultimate casualties. 2. Effective training and a clear understanding of the Education Code in Title V of the Administrative Code is a must. 3. A detailed and formal adoption of board policies and delegation of authority to the CEO must be clearly published and systematically used as the parameters that govern board-CEO relations. I hope you have enjoyed this podcast. The Community College League looks forward to providing you with subsequent presentations designed to help you succeed.